What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. President Obama warns of a long fight to defeat the Islamic State. Speaking to a summit on countering the Islamic State in New York Tuesday, President Obama warned the fight against the IS group will be neither easy nor short.
This is not an easy task. We have ISIL taking root in areas that already are suffering from failed governance in some cases. In some cases, civil war or sectarian strife as a consequence of the vacuum that exists in many of these areas, ISIL has been able to dig in.
Mr. Obama said more than 100 nations and institutions have answered the call as part of a global movement united behind a mission of destroying the IS group. He announced Nigeria, Tunisia, Malaysia have joined the more than 60-member U.S.-led coalition fighting the IS group in Iraq and Syria. Meanwhile, the U.S. announced sanctions against 25 people and 5 groups connected to IS with the aim of disrupting the militant group's access to the international financial system. In Burkina Faso, soldiers met little resistance Tuesday as they occupied a presidential guard barracks in the capital Ouagadougou following the guard's failed coup earlier this month. Witnesses reported bursts of gunfire as soldiers moved in. The presidential guard, known as the RSP, took the interim president, Michel Kafando, the prime minister, and several cabinet officials captive September 16, naming General Gilbert Diendera as leader of the junta. Diendera appeared on a local radio station asking his men to lay down their weapons. The RSP agreed to disarm as part of a deal last week to end the coup, but on Monday they asked for guarantees of safety for themselves, their families, before handing over their weapons. This is VOA News. The death toll from an apparent airstrike on a wedding party in Yemen soared to at least 131 on Tuesday, one of the deadliest attacks affecting civilians in that conflict between the Saudi-led coalition and Shia Houthi rebels. A Saudi military official denies launching any airstrikes on the village of Wahija near the Red Sea city of Mocha. Hungarian Foreign Minister Péter Szijjártó Tuesday said that his government will propose world quotas for nations to share the burden of taking in migrants and refugees.
The major sources of this mass popular movement are countries which became unstable because of international political decisions. And these international political decisions were not made only by Europe. There were other big players of world politics taking part in these decisions.
Speaking to reporters on the sidelines of the UN meetings in New York, he said all major international actors should help carry the burden. He said Hungary would make the proposal at Wednesday's high-level meeting on the migration and refugee crisis impacting Europe. He said more than 275,000 migrants and refugees have entered his country since January. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 500,000 migrants have now made the perilous Mediterranean Sea journey this year in search of a new life on the continent of Europe. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon Tuesday urged South Sudan not to betray and disappoint the international community over implementation of a regional peace agreement aimed at ending nearly 2 years of fighting.
The conflict that broke out in December 2013 dashed the aspiration of South Sudanese people for a brighter future. It shattered the optimism of the international community. Thousands of lives have been lost in a senseless conflict. We are here all to help you. I hope you will not betray and disappoint us. I really sincerely count on your leadership, and I hope that this meeting will really bring us together, oneness.
The South Sudanese army and rebels have repeatedly accused each other of breaking the ceasefire that's part of the peace agreement reached a month ago. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir, speaking via video conference, insisted Tuesday considerable progress has been made implementing the ceasefire. Also on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly session in New York Tuesday, Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari told Reuters news agency he'll hold his country's oil portfolio in his new cabinet rather than trust anyone else with the main source of the country's revenue. Mr. Buhari, elected in May on a promise to tackle corruption, has made clear he wants to overhaul the oil sector. South Africa's police minister Tuesday acknowledged the rate of violent crime in his country increased for a third year in a row. Murder rate is up more than 4.5%. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, September 30th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf calls for gender parity within the United Nations.
We must therefore all step up and take further measures beyond moralizing gender equality to tangible actions.
Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma says his country is on the verge of defeating the Ebola virus. Burundi's independent media is still off the air months after they were shut down by the government. Burkina Faso's army takes control of the camp belonging to those who staged the failed coup.
Army trucks surrounding the camp of the RSP, the presidential guards behind the failed coup earlier in September. After a few hours of standby, the army gave them an ultimatum.
That's VOA Emily Yop in Ouagadougou. South African motorists allege police abuses in drunk driving crackdown. And a Kenyan church welcomes members of the homosexual community. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Africa's first elected female president, has called for gender parity within the United Nations. Speaking Tuesday at the ongoing 70th regular session of the UN General Assembly, Mrs. Sirleaf said while improvements have been made in the status of women, much more needed to be done. For example, she said only three women have served as presidents of the General Assembly, and there has never been a woman secretary general.
This year, we mark the 20th anniversary of the historic Beijing Conference and its plan of action for women's empowerment and gender equality. We are also marking the 15th anniversary of Resolution 1325 on women's participation in peace processes. And while improvements have been made in the status of women, much more is still to be done. We must therefore all step up and take further measures beyond moralizing gender equality to tangible actions. At 70, only three women have served as president of the General Assembly, one of them being our compatriot many years ago, Mrs. Angie Brooks Randolph. Only a few women have served or continue to serve as special representatives of the Secretary General, and not a single woman has ever served as Secretary General.
President Sirleaf said Ebola has left indelible marks of grief, sorrow, and unimaginable affliction in Liberia and the West Africa sub-region in general. She thanked the international community for its support during the Ebola crisis.
We remain grateful to all of you for the outpouring of support and assistance as we face down the deadly disease, the greatest modern threat to global public health. We thank Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who in partnership with our countries and support from the African Development Bank, the African Union, the European Union, the World Bank, hosted the International Conference on Ebola Recovery to focus attention on and seek support for our post-Ebola recovery program.
President Sirleaf said Liberia is determined to address the development losses of Ebola, including rebuilding better and more resilient health and education systems.
We are now proceeding with the implementation of our post-Ebola economic stabilization and recovery plan with expectations of support from our bilateral and multilateral partners to a regionally approved post-Ebola recovery strategy to which the three affected countries of the Mono River Union have formulated. Mr. President, we are determined to address the development losses, including rebuilding better and more resilient health and education systems. The Addis Ababa Action Agenda, which we adopted in April, offers pathways to various forms of financing, capacity building, and technological exchanges to support the pursuit of our development objectives.
That was Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf speaking Tuesday at the ongoing 70th session of the UN General Assembly. Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma says his country is on the verge of defeating the Ebola virus, which he said has taken a heavy toll on Sierra Leone's socioeconomic fabric. Speaking Tuesday at the ongoing 70th session of the UN General Assembly, President Koroma thanked the international community for its support during the Ebola crisis.
The Ebola virus disease outbreak has taken a heavy toll on the entire socioeconomic fabric of Sierra Leone. But with support from our international friends, we fought back. Today, we have almost defeated the evil virus, and we have recorded zero number of cases for several days in September. Whilst we are making progress to end the epidemic, I commend the United Nations agencies and the international community for their support and commitment to end the epidemic, as well as support for the post-Ebola recovery plan. I particularly commend the Secretary General for mobilizing, for the very first time, a coordinated and integrated UN system intervention to support countries affected by the outbreak of the Ebola virus disease in our region.
Like most of the other African leaders who spoke before him, the Sierra Leone president said reform of the United Nations is imperative to make it more democratic.
As the coordinator of the African Committee of 10 Heads of State on the UN Security Council reform, I take this opportunity to once more emphasize the need for the urgent reform of the Council and again re-echo Africa's concern over the failure of this body to adopt measures that will lead to a comprehensive reform of the Security Council. I wish to call attention to the regrettable status quo that undermines the principles of equity, legitimacy, accountability, and transparency. It also undermines the effectiveness of the Security Council in its pursuits of international peace and security. The need to address the non-representation of Africa in the permanent category and the underrepresentation in the non-permanent category is long overdue and therefore now imperative. Africa demands for two permanent seats and two additional non-permanent seats as articulated in the Ezulwini Consensus and the Street Declaration is just and provides a framework for a fairer and more inclusive United Nations.
That was Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma speaking Tuesday at the ongoing 70th session of the UN General Assembly in New York. In Burkina Faso, the army has been pressuring the RSP, the Presidential Guard, behind the failed coup earlier this month to disarm. A lengthy standoff ended when the army issued an ultimatum and then marched into the rebel camp, meeting little resistance. The Guard's leader, General Gilbert Diendere, called on his men to lay down their weapons. As Emily Yap reports from Ouagadougou, it is not yet clear if there were any casualties.
Army trucks surrounding the camp of the RSP, the Presidential Guards behind the failed coup earlier in September. After a few hours of standby, the army gave them an ultimatum. He says the army is going to give them a last chance to surrender so there are no clashes. The army said 300 men out of the 1,300-member elite unit had already given back their weapons, but a few hardliners still refused to disarm. The RSP soldiers claimed that the army and the transitional government, which was reinstated after the failed coup, didn't give them enough guarantees for their safety. Disarmament was a condition of the peace deal agreed last week, but the transitional government went further during its first post-coup cabinet meeting a few days ago. It decided to dissolve the RSP and open a commission of inquiry into the coup. The disarmament, which has just started, was interrupted as some RSP soldiers said they felt betrayed by such radical measures and refused to disarm. Talking to VOA's French to Africa service shortly after the army ultimatum, RSP leader Gilbert Diendéré also urged his men to lay down their weapons and return to their barracks. Soon after, the army was ordered to take the camp and troops enter without resistance, according to the government. Emily Yap for VOA News from Ouagadougou.
Today's Wednesday, September 30th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on Radio Hot Cocoa in Bamenda, Cameroon. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. 4 months after a coup attempt, Burundi's independent media remain off the air. As Mohamed Yusuf reports, the population is frustrated and is using social media to try to fill the gap, but often receives rumors in the place of what is actually happening.
On May 18th, a group of soldiers attempted to overthrow President Pierre Nkurunziza's government. 2 days later, the coup was foiled, and some independent media outlets like Radio Bonesha and Radio Public Africaine were attacked and banned. Many other stations and newspapers shut down, and their staff fled to neighboring countries. 4.5 months later, the only working radio and TV stations are government-owned. Meanwhile, officials are investigating the private media for allegedly promoting violence and anti-government messages during the coup attempt and the re-election of the president to a controversial third term. Antoine Kaburahe is the managing director of the Iwachu newspaper, the only remaining independent media outlet in Burundi. He says the government prefers having the airwaves to itself.
The government says that there is an investigation, but we know that there is no investigation. And the investigation can be done and media working, but we are convinced that government don't let independent media working. So now there is only government media who is working, the radio and the television, public, but they are not public, they are doing propaganda.
Kaburahe says the few remaining journalists are operating in a hostile political environment. Human rights organizations have warned the journalism field in Burundi has become increasingly dangerous. The rights groups accuse authorities of denying journalists access to some neighborhoods where the government is cracking down on anti-government protesters. Bujumbura resident Joan Batista tells VOA it has been hard to get reliable news and information on what is happening in his country.
It
is very hard to get news in Burundi, he says. The only media working is the government-owned radio station, and they do not tell exactly what is happening in the country. He says it is very difficult to get news unless you are at the scene and witness what is happening. Burundians have resorted to sharing news through social media, which some blame for further inflaming the situation. Kaburahe says that is what you get when you shut the media and people have no access to the information.
There are many rumors of people will be killed or there will be attacks. And I think this is the consequences of the silence of the independent media. So everybody put on WhatsApp every information, truth or not, and There is fear.
In August, the Committee to Protect Journalists and 18 other organizations urged Burundian authorities to investigate attack on journalists and human rights defenders. Burundian authorities were not available for comment. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Police in South Africa are cracking down on motorists who drive while drunk, and the government is debating harsher penalties for drunk drivers as road death rates increase. At the same time, members of the public are accusing the police of extorting bribes from them and assaulting them for allegedly driving under the influence of alcohol. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
My name is Blessing, and I'm from Skoda Angels, and I'm your driver today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
A woman hands her car keys to a designated driver outside a Johannesburg bar. She called the Scooter Angels to get her home safely after drinking more wine than expected. Owner Jeremy De Huda says there's been a big spike in demand recently.
The traffic department enforcing the no drinking and driving laws, the more roadblocks, you know, they're clamping down, becoming more stringent, and that's obviously good for business.
De Huda says people in South Africa are more aware of the dangers of drunk driving. But he adds, many of his Johannesburg clients also say they want to avoid being hassled by Metro Police. Motorists say the police demand bribes and threaten to jail them. A young woman stands at a busy intersection. She was recently involved in a minor collision with another vehicle. Soon after that, she says, a Metro Police vehicle arrived.
And the next thing, another one arrived, and another one, and another one. In the end, there were probably about 12 Metro cars with about 24 officers on the scene. Things turned very ugly, very fast.
She asked VOA to disguise her voice. She says the officers swore at her and screamed that she was drunk. A breathalyzer test showed she wasn't above the legal blood alcohol limit. Then the woman says they surrounded her and pushed her.
Eventually, I had a panic attack. They just kept making me blow in the breathalyzer as if they weren't happy with the result that their machine was giving them. And all the while, they have their hands on their firearms.
The Metro Police say they take all allegations made against officers seriously and will investigate them if reported. Darren Taylor for VOA News, Johannesburg.
United Nations officials in South Sudan say they are preparing for demining operations in parts of the country affected by the conflict now that the rainy season is coming to an end and a peace agreement has been signed by both sides. Philipton Aller of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
Tim Lanner, the head of the United Nations Mine Action Service in South Sudan, says between July 2014 and June 2015, UNMAS cleared nearly 20 million square meters of land before handing it back to the communities.
So in real terms, that means that we are providing protection of civilians by clearing those hazardous areas. By clearing the minefields, we're making way for safe ground for agriculture, for kids to play in the fields, and for people to go back to their normal lives.
Letna says UNMAS stopped the mining activities when the conflict erupted in late 2013. Letna says they were able to clear areas where landmines were planted by the warring parties. Now, he says, his agency wants to focus on removing all ordnance planted during the last 20 months of conflict.
Since December 2013, there is evidence of mines being laid. We are not able to identify who has laid those mines. There have been a couple of incidents over the last 6 months on a road up in Bentui. We are unable to directly attribute at the moment. We hope to be able to give a clearer position when we're able to do so.
Lenna says UNMAS is working in Bor, Marakal, Juba, Bentui and Wau at protection of civilian sites as well as supporting UNMIS and humanitarian partners to operate safely. Lenna says he hopes the warring parties to the recent conflict will respect and implement the peace agreement they signed so UNMAS personnel have a chance to continue their demining activities across the country. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
Earlier this month, the Anglican Church of Kenya revoked a priest's license and suspended four others for alleged homosexual activity. It sent a message that there is no room for homosexuality at churches in Kenya. But as Raoul Ombuo reports from Nairobi, there is one place where members of the LGBT community is welcome.
Put your hands together and appreciate the Lord. What a word!
Lillian Kimani sits in the back. This is not her regular church. The 28-year-old is a lesbian.
For a long time, I had not attended normal church. Well, because I felt like the likes of me are not accepted, maybe. Many people don't know that I'm gay, you know. If they knew, they would look at me differently. But I choose to go where I'm accepted, where I do not have to hide my identity.
In central Nairobi, just one church welcomes people like Kimani. Reverend Baraza Makoha ministers to sexual minorities. The father of four has been threatened several times, but he persists.
It would be wrong for any clergy to preach a message that can create some spiritual violence in terms of excluding people, in terms of judging people, and in terms of making people even hate themselves, especially the LGBT people, because the church has to change its perspective, and the church also needs to understand the LGBT people.
But other priests disagree. They say alternative churches are not the answer. Reverend Silas Mukulwa of the Anglican Church says ministers should steer gay people towards straight lives.
A man should not sexually involve himself with another man. That is evil. And if any church engages in such things, the church is not worshiping the living God, because God's teaching against it.
U.S. President Barack Obama argued for equal rights for LGBT individuals on his visit to Kenya in July. His Kenyan counterpart, Uhuru Kenyatta, described it a non-issue. Homosexuality is illegal in at least 36 African countries, including Kenya. Penalties include prison and fines. Many point to a religious and cultural belief as justification. But for Makoha's small congregation, the weekly worship service provides a moment of peace, free of discrimination.
Come on, church!
Naya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the Africa Women's Basketball Championships in Yaounde, Cameroon. Mozambique dismissed Gabon 79-49 in Group B action on Tuesday. Defending champions Angola outclassed Guinea 89-47 and Nigeria beat Algeria 79-49. In Group A, Cameroon outwitted South Africa 78-51, Senegal beat Egypt 84-72, and Mali dismissed Uganda 73-55. At the end of the group stage, Cameroon topped Group A with 10 points. They are followed by Mali, Mozambique, Gabon, Uganda, and South Africa in that order. Angola top Group B and are followed by Nigeria, Senegal, Egypt, Guinea, then Algeria. In rugby, despite a second-half rally, Namibia lost to Tonga 35-21 at the Rugby World Cup in Exeter, England on Tuesday. Namibia is stuck at the bottom of Group C with no points after two games, while world champions New Zealand lead the group with 9 points. In badminton, the Nigeria International Badminton Open Championship gets underway in the capital Abuja today, Wednesday. The five-day contest has attracted men and women from Algeria, Austria, Egypt, Ghana, Portugal, South Africa, Turkey, Uganda, United States of America, Zambia, and hosts Nigeria. Moving on to football, Ghanaian head of state John Mahama has instructed the sports ministry to immediately mobilize funds and pay outstanding bonuses owed to Ghana's senior women's football team, the Black Queens. The Accra Media closed on Tuesday. The Black Queens won the gold medal in women's football at the recent All-Africa Games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo. A crisis has escalated since the players firmly rejected the US dollars 2,000 offered by the sports ministry. Each player is reportedly owed $23,000. Bonuses have accumulated from the qualifying contests to the Black Queens' ultimate victory in Brazzaville. The team refuses to leave their hotel since they returned from Brazzaville until they receive their dues. Finally, Botswana hosts Ethiopia in a friendly football match in Gaborone today, Wednesday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Witnesses report gunfire and explosions in Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou, as the army presses soldiers behind a recent failed coup to disarm. The fighting began late Tuesday afternoon, local time, a few hours after army troops surrounded the camp of the Presidential Guard, the RSP, in Ouagadougou. Journalists Emily Yob reports for VOA in Ouagadougou. She said she heard several explosions and then saw smoke rising from the direction of the camp. But that is it for this Wednesday, September 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Mark Ouma, along with our engineer James Harriman, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we'll come to you live from New York, where world leaders are gathering for the United Nations General Assembly. They will address a variety of global concerns, including the European migrants crisis, climate change, and this year's UNGA theme, the UN at 70, a new commitment to action. Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on Straight Talk Africa.